This episode, we will be doing a very special episode of Sounds Good to Us titled Q&A. We're taking a week off from our full episodes to do a mini episode. It's summer, y'all. We need a little bit of a break, especially Jordan, who does all the editing. We've got some questions from listeners. We're going to answer. Maybe you'll learn something about how we think about music, and maybe you'll learn a little bit about us. I'm Gregory Hill.
And I'm Jordan Stone.
This is a music podcast where usually, in our fuller episodes, two friends of over 21 years and counting pick one artist per episode and talk about why that artist is awesome to us, even in the infinitesimally small chance that you might not agree with us. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram and listen to us wherever you get your podcasts. Jordan, hello. Welcome
Yo.
To the week. We've collected some questions from social. We've selected what we think are our favorites. Doesn't mean that they're objectively the best. This is a podcast about opinions, and so therefore we selected the ones that were our favorites, and we've got us most excited to answer them. So let's just go ahead and get things started. You ready?
Let's do it.
All right, I'm going to be the question asker. You're going to go first, and then we'll see what good conversation happens here. This is kind of the first time we've done this. Let's see how it goes. Jordan, this comes from the user JB. I don't know who that is, but shout out to JB. What are some lesser-known bands or an artist that you're listening to right now, and what do you think their best song is?
Yeah, so admittedly right now, in the past, I guess the past decade or so, since Spotify came out, I listened to a lot of singles. It's just kind of how Spotify has, you know, changed consumption of music. But there is one artist, actually two I'm going to do right now, that stand out, and one is Ingrid Andress. She's brand new. She released her first single in 2019. Her album, Ladylike, came out in 2020. She lives in Nashville. She's defined as country. She tours with country acts, but it's really just singer-songwriter with a small country tone. I mean, people like to define themselves as country to fit into a genre, but what really drew me to her was this song called More Hearts Than Mine. Pour your whiskey. So she's like, think Sarah Bareilles, Florence and the Machine, and Maren Morris had a kid. That's Ingrid Andress. Really talented. I'm going to see her in Nashville in October, and I'm excited to see her live. The second for me is Tyler Childers. We have talked about him before. Greg introduced me to him. I'm ever thankful
You're
for
welcome.
That, Greg. Thank you. It is impossible for me to be more impressed in a short amount of time than I am with Tyler Childers. He's incredible. You only get an artist like him maybe once a decade. So do yourself a favor, listen to his entire catalog. Start with the top songs on Spotify and just work your way down. My favorite song is White House Road.
Early in the morning when the sun does rise. Laying in the bed with bloodshot eyes. Late in the evening when the sun sinks low.
So I'm keeping my eyes peeled for when he announces a Nashville tour date. Greg, I'm sure we will be there because he is legit.
The question, will we be there together or separately?
But we'll see each other from across the room and just wave. It'll
if
be awkward.
Lucky.
But yeah, that's better.
Jordan will be, well, the reason why I wouldn't want to be near you is because, as you've heard on previous episodes, when Jordan goes to a concert for a band that he really likes, he yells out songs very loudly. And he also claps very loudly, not aggressively, not like meanly. He just claps because he appreciates the music. So I can just hear, play White House Road.
Yes.
And everyone being annoyed. So Truth. For any of the Tyler Childers fans, look out for that. But agree with both of these. These are great. I tried to kind of put my own spin on the question. I think this is a really good question. Part of the thing about Sounds Good to Us is we're always trying to introduce people to music that they haven't heard before, or to kind of rekindle their interest of something that they haven't listened to in a while. It's sort of, Jordan has labeled this kind of our mission statement in previous episodes. So to that end, I'm going to go with somebody who's brand new that I'm listening to a lot, that I don't think most people who listen to this podcast probably know. Somebody who's a little bit older, like last 5 years, and then someone who's pretty old to kind of rekindle the interest. My new artist, Japanese Breakfast. Not super new, but like has kind of achieved a moment as of late. Well-deserved. It's a rock band that's headed by a Korean-American musician, director, and author by the name of Michelle Zauner. Paprika is my favorite song in her recent album. As you can hear, this song kind of reminds me a lot of Rilo Kiley. It has this sort of quiet indie rock vibe, but you know, can be a little bit understated, but then can still really hit you in the face. It has this song in particular has this beautiful string backing track. I really like what Japanese Breakfast is doing right now. And while I think a lot of people who pay more particular attention to indie music than our listeners probably do no Japanese Breakfast, but I'm hoping that if you're listening to this and you like Nickelback or you like the bands that we've been talking about, that you'll also be giving Japanese Breakfast a try. Expand your horizons, y'all. Someone who's a little bit further back, it should be no surprise to you that I am a huge fan of Nico Moon's music. We talked about this in the summer playlist, but I there's never a time where I'm not listening to this song. It's called Paradise to Me. It's my song of the summer in 2020 and 2021. I listen to it multiple times a week. Got a 3-day weekend and everybody's loading it up. With my Ray-Bans on and a Yeti in the back of the truck. And I think Nico Moon will undoubtedly become more well known amongst like country fans, pop country fans, country adjacent fans when he finally releases an album, which he has not done yet. But for now, he's sort of more under the radar as far as pop country goes. He has showed up at like a couple festivals in the summer. I think he's doing really well, but I want to hear him do a full album. And then my old, which it's, you know, funny because when the question is around like lesser known, I would assume when most people who are listening to this think about 60s music, they're probably not going like deep. And if they are going deep, you know, they're thinking maybe the Kinks, the Yardbirds, and the Hollies. But my favorite band outside of sort of the Rolling Stones, Beatles canon of the 60s, sort of British rock genre is the Animals. And I've always loved the Animals. Sort of fun fact, my parents saw them in Rolla, Missouri in like the late 60s. So they actually came on a college campus tour to the Missouri College of Mines, shout out to what's now called, I think, Missouri S&T. And so they saw them and they actually told me this story when I was younger. And then they pulled out The Best of the Animal, which is sort of a greatest hits album, from their vinyl collection and played it to me. And this is like a very vivid memory for me music-wise. I hadn't listened to a lot of the Animals outside of like House of the Rising Sun, Don't Let Me Be Misunderstood show up on sort of 60s rock playlists for me. But I recently have been diving much more deeply into their portfolio, and I highly recommend it. I mean, this is an English band that was formed in the 60s. They have a very distinct style. Eric Burdon, the lead singer, has like this really weird voice. And their music oftentimes has this kind of dark quality to it that I in my head is like Southern Gothic, even though it's not. But they also covered a lot of R&B music from the 60s. And so the song that I'll point out in answer to the question is their version of Bring It On Home to Me, which is one of the best songs that's ever been written on the face of the earth. Their cover of it is fantastic. If you ever you heard that version, George?
No. And who sings Bring It On Home to Me? Is that
Sam Cooke?
Yes, thank you. I should know that. It's embarrassing.
It's not embarrassing.
I know the Sam Cooke version. I didn't remember a Sam Cooke.
It's not embarrassing because Jordan is a 90s rock super fan. I'm a like 60s Southern soul and R&B super fan. It's my favorite genre. So that's a great song. But hearing Eric Burdon play it is weird. And Jordan, in your head, where do the Animals, like, you know, you obviously also know a lot about 60s rock. Do the Animals even show up on your radar? Like, do you care?
I know a good amount, but nothing compared to you. And when I think the Animals, all I think of is House of the Rising Sun. That's the Animals and nothing beyond that. So I like this recommendation. I'm going to check them out more.
Yeah, listen to them more. I mean, they're obviously there's a reason why the Beatles and the Rolling Stones like were way more famous now, but
yeah.
I would say the Animals are the type of, like, if they were a 90s or 2000s band, they're the type of band that we would be talking about,
right?
And a lot of people would be shaking their heads yes. They're, you know, sort of, I would say they're in the, like, I'm trying to think famous wise, like, they're probably as famous as Cake, I would say, probably as okay. like a comp, if I talk to old people about it. But yeah.
Yeah.
That's it. All right. So this one comes from Conan. Shout out to Conan. What is your, I love this question. What is your starting song for a workout? So not like name a song in your workout playlist, but what's the first song that you start with on your workout playlist?
I have multiple workout playlists and it doesn't matter which one I'm on. It starts with the same song every single time. And it's Rabbit Run by Eminem. Some days I just wanna up and call it quits. I feel like I'm surrounded by a wall of bricks. Every time I go to get up, I just fall in pits. My life's like one great big ball of shit. If I could just put it all into all I spit, instead of always trying to swallow it, instead of staring. Have you heard this song, Greg?
Oh, it's great.
Yeah, it's perfect to start a workout because of its crescendo. It starts slow and it's Eminem, which, by the way, just a side note, I don't think we have ever mentioned Eminem in the previous 24 episodes of this podcast. Have we?
I don't think so.
Which is,
I don't remember.
Very surprising because of how popular Eminem is. But anyway, this song is an amazing crescendo. It starts off slow. So I start my run or whatever I'm doing and it kind of like gets me going out of the gates. And then the song is just takes off. So check it out. It's been my go-to workout song for 10 to 12 years. It's the last track on the 8 Mile soundtrack. It's obviously overshadowed by Lose Yourself, which is one of the biggest songs of our lifetime. Everyone knows that song. So when I hear this song, though, it's hard to sit still, which part of that is like a Pavlovian response. Even when I played it in the kind of the research for these questions, I was just wanted to get up and do something. Some other songs on my workout playlist, The Nights by Avicii. If you've never listened to Avicii, dive into his catalog more. The Nights is a really cool song. Unsainted by Slipknot and Mercy by Kanye, Big Sean, and a big group of people. That is my workout playlist.
Nice. You also, I was going to do a bit where you're going to say Kanye, Big Sean, and others. And I'm going to say, I don't know others. Are they? But you changed it up. So that's fine. That's part of the improv. My first song in my workout playlist is Energy by Drake. Jordan actually introduced me to this song a while back. I would not consider myself to be like a massive, super Drake fan, but there's a handful of songs that I just love by Drake, and Energy is one of them. It's kind of, to me, the perfect opening to a workout playlist. I play this sort of when I get out of the locker room. So I'm like exiting out, and think of this as like my walk-up music. And so it kind of starts to build. In the beginning, there's no music. It has this like this kind of like gunshot sound, and then it has this really slow beat to it, and then it starts to build up, but the song never really gets aggressive. And so like while I'm stretching or warming up, it kind of builds this tension for me that I want to then release when I listen to harder songs later on.
Yeah. Way, way, way up. Turn it all up. Yeah. Look, I got enemies, got a lot of enemies, got a lot of people trying to drain me of my energy, they're trying to take the way.
So this would, you know, this is my workout walk-up music, although I wish I would have asked what our baseball walk-up music would be, because I have some thoughts on that as well. We'll save that for a future episode. And then, if anyone's curious, the last song on my workout playlist is Layla by Derek and the Dominoes.
What?
Specifically for the piano. You know, like from Goodfellas, the... That like is a good ending because it kind of makes me feel accomplished, and it's you know, time for me to get on with the rest of my day.
Okay.
All right. So next question comes from Adam. Thanks, Adam. If you could only listen to one song for the rest of your life, what would it be? It's getting real.
What an awesome and crazy question. I love it. My answer is Dogs by Pink Floyd. So this is from their album Animals. It's called Dogs. Kind of makes sense. But there's a few reasons I picked this one. First is it's 17 minutes long. So it's already really long. It has like many chapters to it and different styles. And it's up, it's down, it's slow, it's fast. It has everything you want in a song. And it's also mostly instrumental. So for me, I don't think I'd even like one of my favorite songs. It's 2 or 3 minutes with vocals and lyrics. I don't know if I want to listen to that for on repeat for the rest of my life. Right. Which is a side note. I don't know if this question means every song that I ever hear again is replaced with this song.
Yes. It's the way I interpret it is this is the only song you'll hear for the rest of your life.
So that's like you turn on the radio, you get in your car and it plays Dogs by Pink Floyd. I play a song on Spotify like Mbop by Hanson. Yep. It's Dogs by Pink. Okay. All right. So
you pull your guitar off the wall and you start playing and it's Dogs. You hum something in the shower. It's Dogs.
All right. I like my choice even more, but sure. Pink Floyd is a top band for me. One of my favorite artists of all time. I never get sick of them. And this is probably my favorite Pink Floyd song overall. So Dogs is my choice.
It's a great one. Man, Adam, this is a great, just impossible question to answer for someone like Jordan and I because we just overthink it. And honestly, we get stressed out because we know that when you say this, like this one song, you immediately after recording think of 50 more. So I decided as I sat down, like I constantly am trying to massage this, like my personal top 50 songs of all time playlist on Spotify. It's not even public. It's private only to me. I'm constantly working on it and it's sort of like will be my capstone project of my life and my personal love for music right now. And it changes constantly. So I can only have 50. Still Crazy After All These Years by Paul Simon is an example. Express Yourself by NWA. Popular Mechanics for Lovers by Beulah is currently on it. I hope that doesn't get pulled out at some point. Bartender Blues by George Jones. Dead Flowers by Town Van Zandt. And Sure Shot by the Beastie Boys. Again, some of these things might get like removed and other things will add over time. But so I looked through that and I tried to think, okay, which one of these songs, just to like filter it down, which one of these songs would I want to listen to for the rest of my life? And again, it was almost impossible. But for similar reasons to Jordan, it's like if you're only going to have one, it needs to be a song that's pretty adaptable. It needs to be something you can listen to in a lot of different contexts. So I chose Down in the Valley by Otis Redding. Down in the valley. Otis Redding and Paul Simon have probably been my most consistent favorite artists for the longest of my life. You know, my parents introduced me to them. They're sort of the first artists that I remember really listening to, having vinyl of them in the house and learning how to like play a record with Paul Simon or Otis Redding, or I guess the Animals earlier. And so there's consistency here in my life. If there's just one song that I would need for every single context, whether I'm sad, whether I'm happy, whether I'm cooking, whether I'm working out, whether I'm chilling, etc., this song I feel like can apply anywhere, whereas a song like Dead Flowers by Townes Van Zandt is only going to be something I listen to when I'm sad.
I want to add in a fun comment here, and that is we both chose songs that our parents love.
Yep.
My dad's favorite band is Pink Floyd. Your parents love Otis Redding. That's interesting. It shows the influence of our parents on our music tastes.
Yeah, I mean, this is stuff that we've been listening to for a really long time and has sentimental meaning, you know, like I'm not putting, you know, Animals by Nickelback on this as much as I love that song, right?
Like no, sorry, Nickelback, but absolutely not.
Can I also take a side note? How annoying is it that twice I've shit on Nickelback after we spent an entire episode talking about how great Nickelback is and how people shouldn't shit on it?
Hey, they got their 51 minutes of us sucking up to them, so we can do a couple comments on this episode.
Yeah, but that shows how ingrained the hate for Nickelback is. Yeah. That's the band that I choose.
That's true.
I should instead choose, like, I don't know, what's a better stand-in for something that we don't like? We're not a very negative podcast.
Like music or anything.
Next time, instead of saying Nickelback, I should make fun of who?
Trying to think of someone that
the Beatles. I'm just gonna go the Beatles. I'm gonna say
sure,
really, just for fun. All right. So next question here is from Alex. What's a band or artist that you've only heard? This is an interesting question.
It's hard to ask.
It's just like it took me a long time to figure out who it would be because there's so many bands that I'd be like, okay, I should just ask the fucking question. What's a band or artist who you've only heard and love one song from, but you've never listened to another song in their catalog.
Intro by the XX. So I don't, you just heard the clip, right? I don't know if you're the listener, the person who's listening right now to our podcast, if you've heard this song. I don't, it's not like a radio song. I don't even know where I heard it. I'm sure it was a TV show or a movie or something. I don't know, but I listen to it all the time. It is one of my favorite songs of my lifetime, and it's an instrumental. There's no lyrics. It's only 2 minutes long, but I wish it was 20 minutes long, and I've never actively listened to another XX song. Have you, Greg?
No.
I don't know why. I've listened
to this song a lot, but I don't know either.
When I was asked, seeing this question from Alex, right, I was like, it's intro by the XX. For some reason, I've never listened to the rest of their catalog, and I'm not sure why. And I think I'm going to have to change that, though. And just, I've kind of made myself aware of this. I'm going to have to go listen to more of the XX, which I don't even know what they sound like. Is this song like their other songs? I don't know. I hope it is, because it's an amazing song.
The rest is it's a ska band from San Diego, like Real Big Fish. We do a future episode on XX. Why not? I struggle with this question. I think I have the right answer. Again, Jordan and I are classic overthinkers, and I spend probably way too much time racking my brain to figure out which is the, like, who is the answer to this question. I think that, like, the way I think about it is, let's say of all of these, because there might be multiple, I know for a fact that the artist, relative to how much I like this song, and then if you compare that to me not hearing a single other song by that person, I know this is the answer for me. And it's Charlie Robison. He put out a song in 1998 that I love called My Hometown.
Well, I had a buddy back in 81, and we made ourselves a pact. We were heading for the new pipeline. We were never coming back.
And even when I pulled up Spotify, I didn't recognize any of the other songs. And so I started listening to them. And then immediately I realized, fuck, now that I've listened to more of his songs, he no longer can be the answer to my question, because now I've heard multiple songs from Charlie Robison. But
you did it before. You know what I mean? Like, you did it in preparation for.
I know. So I think, on a technicality, my answer is a lie. But before I did that to confirm, I know for a fact that Charlie Robison is my favorite artist that I've only listened to one song by. Do you like that song? You've heard that song.
I don't know. I don't know. I have to go back and listen to it.
It's good. Okay. Yeah, I know you would like it. All right. So next question here, and we're getting into sort of more the mechanics of music itself here, which is really exciting because we don't get to talk about this that much. This is from Nick. Where do you see the future of rock production? I'm going to expand a little bit and say just kind of music production in general, and sort of in terms of using fake drums, direct plugins, auto-tune, etc. Do you think the idea of all members playing live to a track is dead, or do you feel like it's more context specific?
A great and very technical question here. I'm going to address it in parts. So the first part of the question is, where do you see the future of rock production with fake drums, direct plugins, auto-tune? I have a degree in audio engineering. I started recording music in 1999 in my basement, but I'm a retired audio engineer, in quotes. I mean, I don't do it for a living anymore. So this is a great and tough question for me. Rock is a complicated genre. I'm just going to throw out some bands that you'd all define as rock. Kings of Leon, Linkin Park, Green Day, Imagine Dragons, Metallica. They're all rock bands, but they're very different in the way they approach rock music. And so one thing we've never really approached on this podcast is music is an art form. It is. And how you use instruments is an expression of the art form. Let's talk about Linkin Park. They're a great example. They have live drums, but they also have drum machine. So they're live drums, but also like hip hop style drums combined together. And we still call Linkin Park a rock band. And they've been doing it for 20 plus years, right? It's not like they're brand new. A band like Rage Against the Machine, who we've talked about in previous episodes, has three instruments and vocals. That's it. And they're still rock. although they're kind of nothing like Linkin Park. So for the future of rock and addressing this question, I think and hope we see artists like a Green Day and a Rage Against the Machine, and we see artists like Machine Gun Kelly. Machine Gun Kelly is new. He uses a lot of drum machine, not live instruments, but he's still rock music. And if you want my true opinion on this, like what I think about this question, rock is all about guitar. When I think rock, I think, I was about to say acoustic. I think Nickelback is in my brain.
Exactly, but listening to too much Nickelback.
When I think rock, I think distorted guitar, not acoustic guitar. And then lastly,
about distorted acoustic guitar?
Yeah. As for auto-tune, it has its place, which we will get to in the next section. These two questions kind of combined together. So I won't get into auto-tune quite yet.
Yeah. I think I remember when Jordan and I used to talk before we started the podcast about content. We were like, can you have kind of middle of the road opinions and be something that somebody wants to listen to? And I think part of the reason why I don't think I'll ever be like a famous podcast person is because most of my opinions are middle of the road because I really appreciate nuance. And I think the more like sexy and exciting opinions are the ones where someone goes, fuck digital music. Yeah. It's only about real guitar, right? Or on the other thing, someone says it should all be new and it should all be digital music, right? And the problem is that that's not how music works. People have been obsessing about the status of rock and roll since fucking, you know, Rocket 88, you know, Jackie Brenston, the Delta Cats, and
Robert
later,
Johnson.
You know, and you know, later Chuck Berry, and people have been talking about this forever. And it's like, okay, here's the thing. I think the most rock and roll thing is to express, fuck you, Siri. I think the most rock and roll thing is to express yourself in a way that does like kind of get in your face. I think that's like the one constant throughout rock and roll is it's sort of challenging conventional opinions. And it's about like really just expressing yourself in a way that typically has to do with being youthful, right? And the hard thing is that rock and roll in some ways has like generally been replaced by music that is much far reaching than just a guitar, right? We're talking, you know, when Jordan and I were growing up, obviously there's a lot of alternative rock, but like the youth movement was predicated on hip hop, right? And the industry saw that. And obviously now you have hip hop, which is more of a digital genre, more infused into rock music. I think that that's a good thing, right? I think that the more that we talk about genreless music a lot, I think that's much more exciting to me because I don't want to hear music that seems destined for 1987 or music that's destined for 1995. I want music that sounds like 2021 or 2022. And so I think about this a lot like I think about cooking. You know, cooking is also a very kind of trendy thing, just like music is. And two things happen in both cooking and music. Number one, people go after trends. People trend chase, and then a segment ends up reacting to that trend and being really anti that trend. So for those of you who are familiar with the thing called sous vide, which is like you put your food in this bath and it keeps it at a temperature and cooks it perfectly, more people know about that now than probably would have 5 years ago. But after sous vide, there's these people who are like, sous vide is soulless. Fuck that. I'm only using live fire. Both of those opinions are stupid. Both that like sous vide is the only way that we should cook and or live fire is the only way we should cook. That's dumb because you should use your resources. Use what's at your disposal because back again, rock and roll is about expressing yourself. Number two, the best to me in both areas, food or music, should be focused on product or output more than anything else. Like I don't necessarily care how someone got there. If the product is delicious, if the output and the music is amazing, that's what matters to me the most. And so artists who use, or chefs who use everything at their disposal to create the most delicious, or in the case of music, best sounding thing is what we should be celebrating. Last thing I'll say is, I definitely think there are some bands that will be like, fuck autotune and computers, which in itself is a very rock and roll attitude that I embrace and celebrate. And I think that bands who do that will continue to be rock and roll. My hope is that they evolve and not just sound like kind of like cover bands. Like there's some country artists right now who are playing, you know, country music that just, it's cool because it sounds like music that was put out in the 70s and 80s, which isn't that exciting. But making modern music with modern technology, but old attitudes is interesting. We've talked a lot about genreless music on the podcast. I think that's where everything's going to head towards. And if fake drums sound better for a specific song than real ones, does it really matter? That's my hope. I want both to exist.
They
and
should.
I want people to make good choices. All right. So this one comes from, that was a much longer soapbox than I thought I would go on. This next one comes from Chad. Is the quality of voice important? In other words, is autotune a bad thing?
Let's first address the quality of voice question first. No, it isn't important if their voice quality being bad works for them. But you can't have a truly bad voice with no upside and really make it as a professional singer. So like if you're actually bad, you really should pick something else to do with your career. Mm-hmm. There's many options out there, but let's talk about
that's a why few. I'm not a professional singer.
Same here, right? Like let's talk about a few though that it works for them. Kurt Cobain, Bob Dylan, and then I even think a Johnny Cash and John Prine. When I sit down and listen to Johnny Cash, I don't love his voice. I mean, it's just like a dude who's kind of talking and then kind of singing too. Johnny Cash, I don't listen to him for his voice other than the fact that it sounds cool, but he's not a good singer per se. Anyway, all of these Kurt Cobain, Bob Dylan, Johnny Cash, John Prine, they're not great singers on paper, but it works for them. But again, back to my point, if you're just a straight up awful vocalist with no redeeming qualities to your voice, just find another career. And then let's move to the second part of the question from Chad. As for auto-tune, like anything, there can be too much of it. When you hear T-Pain or mid-career Kanye, here's what I want you to do, is picture in your mind a knob. And the knob goes from 1 to 10, okay? And obviously you turn it up all the way to 10, and that's the maximum level. When you hear T-Pain, he has it at 10. So you are hearing the auto-tune activate, and it's obviously blatantly obvious, right? And some people might say it's too much. It's, you know, potentially overdone. Auto-tune is somewhat of a necessary evil, but in most cases, less is more. So you're hearing in most songs auto-tune on that knob I was talking about at like a 1, 2, or 3, and you don't know it's there. So auto-tune, in my opinion, is bad for music when it's turned up to a 10 overall. Now, I think you agree with this, but Kanye used auto-tune like almost artistically, not to make his voice sound better. And so I think that's somewhat of an exception. So that's another conversation. But last point I want to make here is auto-tune exists because not every artist can sing like Adele. They just can't. And a little bit of auto-tune to give them help isn't a bad thing. In my opinion, you, the listener, shouldn't know it's auto-tuned, though.
Yep.
And that's my feelings on it.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said. Other than the Kanye artist, I've spent so much time trying to figure out what Kanye's intentions are. I never know. Is he a genius or is he crazy?
Know.
So maybe it's a little bit of both, especially after the recent album.
It's a little bit of both.
We also, by the way, should on a future episode do just a reaction episode to his new album because people say that it's actually awesome and I want to hear it. I haven't even listened to it yet. All right. I actually agree with most of what you said. I think one thing that stands out is I think most people when you're listening to music and you poll people and you say like, what do you think of auto-tune? And let's say like 90% of people say fuck auto-tune. They don't realize that almost every single band they listen to uses auto-tune in some capacity.
It's a tool. Right?
It's a tool. And, you know, I think like every new technology, when something comes out, you have the T-Pains and the Kanyes and like other artists of that era just trying to use it and figure out how to use it because it was so new. New from like, I mean, it wasn't brand new, but you know what I mean? Like people were starting to use it more. And then it became famous. I remember actually T-Pain had an iPhone app in like the early iPhone store that you could like record your voice and it would auto-tune it. That's how associated he was with auto-tune. But then I think over time, to your point, people start to learn how to use it, not so much as like a feature, but more as a compliment. And, you know, I think I would entertain an argument if someone was like, what auto-tune does is actually bring people's voice into something that's more palatable. Like it smooths the edges off of it. That would be a good argument, I think, for saying that auto-tune is bad if it's just like basically making everything sound acceptable or similar. Because you pointed out a lot of bands who had really out their voices that what would auto-tune have done to the specialness of their voice?
Right.
if it's just from the standpoint of not liking it philosophically, I disagree. I think it is important. Like you talked about vocal quality, it is important. It's probably not the most important thing. I think similar to your answer, you know, there's a lot of bands we can talk about that didn't have conventionally great voices. You mentioned a couple. Anthony Kiedis is also one from the Red Hot Chili Peppers that comes to mind for me, who just like had no business singing, but was a great front man, and that matters. I also think it means what we come down to quality. So again, to your point, when we think about quality of voice, do we think about Whitney Houston? And do we think about someone who's just has perfect pitch and can sing huge range and these like changes in key and go through different octaves and everything else? Or do we think about someone who's unique? And I think to me, the vocal quality that matters is uniqueness much more. There's one of the things you'll realize is like, even if you look at something like American Idol, you see people who are 100 million times better singers than almost every single popular musician of all time. But there's a lot more great singers than there are great musicians, and vocal quality doesn't do it enough. Now, you can't have someone who's distractingly bad, but you can have people who have a quality to their voice, a interestingness to their voice that matters. I also see sort of autotune as an instrument. It makes sense in the mix, put it in. If it doesn't, take it out. Other way I put it is sort of it works effectively if the band overall has a quality to it already. You can't create talent out of nowhere. Autotune is not magic. You know, it's not something that like I can sing into autotune and it makes me sound like David Bowie. It doesn't. And you just couldn't do that. So for me, it's a lot like, you know, MSG in cooking. Like I use MSG a lot in my cooking. MSG is controversial, like autotune. People think it's lazy. Like people who cook think that using MSG is lazy. You should be able to pull out the flavors on your own. And it can make, though, great things better, but it can't make bad things good. And you have to use it sparing to have a balanced product. So I think autotune is fine as long as it's used well.
Yep.
All right. So this one comes from Jonathan. There's a lot more insider industry questions than I expected. What role does the record label play in an album's creation? You guys always mention the label that released X album. Why does that matter?
I'm going to come at this from the music business angle. I've worked in artist management, so I've worked a lot with labels. I also did a brief stint working for a label, so I've had a front row seat for this question. And I can break it down very simply for you. In most cases, the label has power because of one thing. Bread. Cake. Paper. Coin.
Bags.
Bags. Money. It's because of money. They are the ones paying the bill in most cases. So I'll break it down this way. If you're a younger and less established artist, you're up and coming, right? You have less power. You're not popular. You haven't made a bunch of money. You've got the label paying for your album to be recorded. The studio time is being paid for by the label. So they're going to have a lot of influence and power over what you're doing. The album cover, the branding, the title, the singles, like almost everything goes through the label. And it's very common for a label to hear your final product, your album, and say, nah, there's no hits on this. Go back to the studio and re-record, and we want a hit from you. I have an example. The best example of this song is the song Love Song by Sarah Bareilles. This is not a song about love. She was told by the label, she brought the album to the label, right? And it didn't have Love Song on it. And they said, no. We want you to go write a love song and we want a hit. A love song, something people can, you know, sing along to and everything. And she was like, okay, fuck it. So the lyrics for this song are literally blank stares at blank pages. No easy way to say this. You mean well, but you make this hard on me. I'm not going to write you a love song because you ask for it, because you need one. You see, I'm not going to write you a love song because you tell me it's make or break.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people listening to this podcast right now that probably never realized that. You're listening to Sarah Bareilles tell her label, no, you're not going to get a love song. It's so meta. Yeah. It's hilarious.
Here's the best part is the label was like, thank you for writing a hit.
Yeah.
This is great. Give a shit. Like, this is awesome.
They don't care. They're like, you're calling us out, but who cares? It's a great song. But here's, I guess, kind of some irony of this story. They were right. right? Like, they told her, go write this awesome love song. And she did, even though it's about them and how she's not going to, I don't know. It's kind of this interesting irony that she mm-hmm. that they were kind of right and she did it. But lastly here, if you don't want a label to have control over your career, Greg, I think you're going to go into this a little more. You have a few options. Number one, fund it yourself. Self-release, self-distribute. Greg's going to talk about this. It's easier than it's ever been. Mm-hmm. Or find a label that's hands-off. It's probably going to be an indie, but you know, they might let you do what you want to do. And then the last one is the big one. Once you get big enough that you now have power, the label now trusts you. You've made them a bunch of money. They're going to let you pick the album cover and you pick the singles, and they're kind of going to take a step back. So that is the truth of how it works in the music business.
Yeah, that's part of the reason I love talking to you about music, because you bring a perspective that I just never have had. My perspective is as a fan, and so like my interactions with labels, it's very different now than it used to be. I think one of the things that Jonathan pointed out is we talk about labels a lot. We probably talk about them a lot less for newer artists. And part of the reason is, like, you know, in the 90s specifically, when we grew up and we're really getting our taste of music generated, labels provided sort of a litmus test. You know, it's like, why do labels matter? Well, as a fan, a label kind of gives you like a like me bias, or like, my favorite band is on label A, I must like everything else on label A. And so in a time in which like music discovery was much harder than it is now, where you basically either had to like trust one friend or like an older sibling or MTV or maybe Rolling Stone magazine, this was a way for you to get deeper into other artists by saying, okay, what are the other artists on this label? And so like example for me is Death Row Records. Like, I would not have gained access to like half of the hip hop that I listened to in the 90s as a kid if it wasn't for Death Row Records as a label. And in fact, they knew this because they put out like sort of compilation albums, not that were headlined by Tupac, that were headlined by Snoop Dogg, but then included the rest of their stable of artists, because they assumed that you would buy that record because you liked Death Row. I can't think of now buying like a Columbia Records album, but in the 90s, I definitely had label affinity. A lot of underground punk bands kind of work the same way. So that's like, as a fan, why you should have used to have cared about labels. It's harder to make that argument now, but that's just sort of from history. But as far as importance for me as a fan also, though, is that labels provide, like Jordan said, a lot to the artist. They have economies of scale. They can help artists get access to just way better means of productions than they could on their own. So you're going to hear better produced albums, which you could argue is good or bad, but you will on average hear much better produced albums because labels exist. They invest in quality music. In some cases, they're able to provide really good feedback. Best case scenario, they go through a process of editing, not unlike a great executive producer or producer in a movie would. Albums better, or they can completely fuck up albums, right? Because they don't get it, or they're only for sure optimizing for their money, right? Both of those things are possible. They can keep voices that we want to hear heard. Like, labels have traditionally been very much focused on money, obviously, because they're putting a lot of money into it. But as music fans, we don't give a shit about the CEOs of labels. We don't care about what money they have. We just want to hear cool shit. And so because of profit motives, like, it meant that they were only going to fund things that they knew would sell. And it's not until something is already selling that they then pile on and do a bunch of fast follows, right? We think about everything that sort of happened, like Nirvana on was like, there's 10 years of people trying to rip off grunge because they know it's profitable. Same thing with hip hop. So you get a lot of inauthenticity in music because of labels. So, you know, that's one thing. And then lastly, like, labels obviously also provide distribution and marketing. So a lot of the things that like we wouldn't know about some great artists if it wasn't for labels. And you could argue that these things are less important now than now that we have Spotify, now that we have the internet, now we have YouTube. I'm a little bit dubious of whether or not this is played out as democratically as people say. Like, I don't actually think it's possible for just some rando in their living room or like bedroom to create the great next record, right? Like, I don't think that happens. I think labels now are adapting and they're trying to make it seem a little bit more independent, but they're all conglomerates like everything else in the United States. And so like
massive gatekeeping.
Yeah, 100%. So I don't think things have changed that much. In fact, they probably have gotten a little bit worse because now it's even harder to find music because there's so much noise.
Fun fact for you. Do you know who owns Death Row Records? This is going to blow your mind.
Sony, probably.
Hasbro.
That's awesome. I didn't know that.
Dude, they own... So the same company that owns Magic the Gathering owns Death Row Records.
I didn't know that. So last one here, Jordan, from the listeners. Again, thanks everybody for putting in your questions. If we didn't get to your, sorry, we will try to get to them in future episodes. These are really good episodes because, again, we kind of get to take a week off a little bit and just talk and be more casual. So keep those questions coming anytime. Last one here is from Chad. What's your opinion on true musical talent versus showmanship?
My take on this is a little weird, so just hear me out.
Doesn't surprise me.
Music, for me, is about the music. And what the artist puts onto a recording is what is most important to me. For context, I like recorded music more than I like live music. I've been told that is a crazy opinion. Most people disagree with it. Greg's shaking his head, but I've had a lot of
people, I agree with you.
Yeah, I've had a lot of people tell me, no, live music's way better. And I'm just like, no, I prefer recorded music. So obviously, true musical talent is important to me because all I care about is the recording. So let's talk about the showmanship side, it's hard to say, of this question. When I'm listening to music, the showmanship is completely irrelevant. It'd be like if I was watching a comedy with you, Greg, and you go, yeah, but Jonah Hill isn't funny in person. I'd be like, I don't care. We're watching a movie. What does that have to do with me? Honestly, that's the best analogy that I could come up with, right? Is I'm watching a movie. He's not funny in person. I don't care. But it obviously matters, the showmanship side of this, when you're playing a concert. You're performing live on TV, music videos. Like anytime I can see the artist and they're performing, the showmanship does matter. So to wrap it up for me, I think the more you charge for your concerts, the more showmanship you need. If I'm paying $400 to see you in concert, you better have fireworks and a flyover and fucking like, you know, big screens and LEDs and shit, right? Like that's what I expect. Point. Yeah, that's what I expect to see. But if you want to charge me $15 and it's just you and a guitar, I'm all for it. In fact, I prefer that. So it depends on context, but that's my opinion on showmanship versus musical talent.
Yeah, I mean, some of the best shows you and I have probably ever seen were Corey Brannan, early 2000s in East Nashville for $5. But what I will say, though, is that I do... So my question here is kind of like, what do we mean by showmanship? If we mean by showmanship, it's just the type of show you put on live, 100%. I don't really care about it because I'm like Jordan. I like going to shows, I guess, especially now that we're kind of going to shows again. But I would much rather put my headphones on and listen to music by myself or listen to music in the context of friends. Like I don't really care about live music at all. Whatever. Deal with it. But I do think in pop music, if we think about more of like the overarching artistry, the product of the musician, and not just the musicality of that musician, I think it's incredibly important. And I think it's almost equally weighted, right? Like we think about, at least in pop music, which is the music that we mostly listen to, we're not listening to a lot of like jazz, classical, we're not that deep into indie music. I mean, mainstream commercial music. Who the person is and what they do, what their story is, what their album art is, how they talk online, you know, all of this stuff is arguably in some ways more important than the music, right? Who these people are is almost more important than what they do. And that's what it's like to be a pop star. You could argue that's good, or you could argue that's bad, or you could argue that's terrible. But at the end of the day, it does matter, right? So part of it is like what we used to think of as a show is changing a lot. We're talking about like multimedia empires. We're talking about like Beyonce putting out Lemonade and it being a movie at the same time as a live show, as well as being like multi-disc spanning streaming events. Like all of this stuff matters. So I do think it's there. I did think probably again too much about this question this week. And so I think like most things, it's important for us to find a way to analyze it. So to kind of close us out here, Jordan, I want you to think about like an X and Y axis. Do you remember that from algebra back in the day? Oh, like the Y axis goes up and down, the X axis goes left to right. And I want us to think about the Y axis is going to be showmanship in as broad as terms as you want to provide, right? And then the X is true musical talent. So let's plot some bands. So The first one that comes to mind most famously is Kiss. So where does Kiss live on that graph for you?
So they would be low and too... Hold on. Showmanship's the Y, so they're high. They're high on the Y. And then I think Kiss is talented. So maybe the middle, like middle X, high Y.
That's the right answer. Most people would say low, and that is not true for Kiss. AC/DC.
It depends who you at. Same thing. Middle X, high Y.
I agree. And before I thought about this, I did not think that was the answer that I was going to land on, right? I actually think that they're close in showmanship and they're close in musicianship.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're on the same page there. Name a band and I'll answer for you.
Metallica.
Ooh, interesting. I'm notably not a huge Metallica fan outside of listening to their music while working out. I'm going to say, like, I think Lars is a really shitty drummer and I don't like him as a person because of his fighting against Napster in the early 2000s.
Yeah, that was shitty.
So I'm like super biased about Metallica. I think Metallica is lower talent than both AC/DC and Kiss. And I think they're a lower showman, although you could argue that Metallica was a more important band. That's my answer. Where do you live?
High Y and far right X. I think they're highly talented and they're very good showmen. Like if you go watch their with the orchestra and all the things that they do in their concerts, and then I also think, I mean, they're one of the best metal band, if not the best metal band of all time.
Give me Motorhead. I'll take Motorhead any day of the week. All right, so what's another one?
Michael
here?
Jackson.
Oh, yeah. We talked about this one on Twitter a little bit, didn't we? I think that Michael Jackson is high, high.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty unassailable.
Is he the best entertainer of all time?
So define what an entertainer is for you.
I think it's everything combined. It's the music, it's the sales, it's the... commercials, it's the music videos, it's the concert performances, it's all of it, everything you can imagine combined together.
And longevity.
Longevity, how many people like him versus dislike him.
Yeah, I think so. I think he has to probably rate the highest, like if you take the product of our X and Y, like if you score this, I think Michael Jackson would probably rate the highest.
I think he sets the bar. He sets the bar. Mm-hmm. I don't really think anyone can get over the Michael Jackson bar. And he did it his entire life. Since he could talk, he was famous and talented.
So here's kind of my point of this exercise. I don't know of anyone who's low, low. Like low, low kind of just means you're irrelevant.
Yeah, no one knows who you are. If you're right? low, if you're low, low.
Like I'm trying to think of a band. Like I don't know if there's a band and the reason why I think this is I think like Chad's question is so good because I think it points to something that a lot of people think about music where you have bands who are skirting by based on their intangibles. I don't know how many bands are actually like that are famous.
This is going to sound mean, but the bands or artists that are low, low eventually reach a point where they give up in most cases and they go do something else. I think your fans, the general public, the people who attend your concerts or buy your albums, they're going to tell you is this worth it? Is it worth your time? And I think there's a reason you don't know who they are. They're just not very good.
That's fair. Last question for you is, can you think of a band that's low, low showmanship, high talent?
Adele.
Like meaning zero showmanship and 100 talent.
I want Adele to like our podcast, but Adele is the first person that comes to mind. And it's not that she's not interesting or whatever, but Adele can just stand on a stage and sing and do nothing else. Mm-hmm. And in fact, if you've seen Adele live, it's pretty much what she does. And she doesn't really do anything spectacular in her promotion, right? Like her music videos, anything you can think of is showmanship, right? So Adele, I mean, do you disagree?
I'm trying to disagree for the entertainment value of the podcast. I don't think I do. Obviously she's an incredible songwriter and But that's not, we don't conventionally think of songwriting as showmanship. So,
but she's one of the best people to ever sing in the history of the world. And then she's, I don't want to say boring. I don't like to, for us to be negative, as you know. So it's just, she's not the best. Let's call her that. Not the best showmanship and there is.
Got it. Yeah. Cause I think what I'm curious about that I want to think even more about in the next week is like, if someone like Adele, like let's say the maximum score you could get was a 200 on this, right? Like you take, instead of the product of both, cause I can't do math. You take the sum of your X score and you take the sum of your Y score, right? And so that means that Adele's is like somewhere between for you, like 100 to 110 or something.
Right? I was thinking 100.
Right? So like, let's say 100, right? Is unquestionably Kiss better than Adele? Because Kiss's might be like 115 because, you know, it's like, you know.
Yeah,
does that make sense?
Probably. This is a nuanced thing, but probably.
I think we're gonna have to develop an advanced statistic, like baseball statistics.
This is some Nate Silver shit.
Yeah, we need to be able to compare. I'm sure someone from The Ringer has already done this.
Yeah.
But like, we need to come up with a way to compare these artists because this question is too important not to have a scientific answer for. So
it is.
Thank you, Chad. And thank you everyone else who took the time to ask questions.
I hope you enjoyed this little break of ours, and we will see you next time when we get back with our weekly artist. Thank you. See ya.